started on it last week. This is the terrible tragedy of the death of Shaul. And it's already been predicted, but now we actually have to go through it. So, everyone has the source sheets? Yep. Okay. So, we started last time. The Plishtim win the war. We already know that. The Plishtim kill the sons of Shaul, Yonatan, Avinadav, Malkishua. We said that it appears that there are two other sons, based on the lists that we have for Shmuel's family elsewhere. There is Eshbaal, and there's a Mephibosheth, who is son of Shaul, separate from the Mephibosheth, who is the son of Yehonatan. They are not at the battlefield. The last thing that we did was to talk a little bit about Ishbosheth. And it's worth it to take a minute just to recap that, because he's a very, very important figure going forward. Ishbosheth will become the king after Shaul dies. Everything doesn't just immediately swap over to David. There's a 7-year wait for David. And during at least part of that, you have to learn Shmuel Beis in order to see how much of it, but during at least part of that 7-year period, Ishbosheth is actually held as king for much of the Jewish people. So where is he now? I brought you Radak in source number 1, who says he didn't fight. Ve'ela gil b'nei shol shezachar heim sheyotzim imo b'milchama l'fichach mesu imo. The 3 sons of Shaul who were mentioned here, Yehonatan, Avinadav, and Malkishua, they died because they went out to war with him. Ve'ishbosheth nishar b'bayis ki lo ayah yotzei b'milchama. Ishbosheth stayed home. He didn't go to war. And I showed you source number 2 where the Malbim says, yeah, Ishbosheth is not a warrior. He's simply not a fighter. Abar Benel offers an explanation for that in source number 3, where at least he tries to explain why Ishbosheth isn't going to war. Right now we just say he's not a fighter, he doesn't go, but it doesn't explain why. So if you look at Abar Benel in source number 3, he says Vinira Ishbosheth labala milchama lechul shaso ol siba acheres. Either because he is weak, or for some other reason. Or, he says, perhaps he actually fled with Avner, because those are the other ones who don't die in this battle, who are somewhat surprising. In addition to Ishbosheth, the generals of Shaul, Avner, and Amasa, are not going to die here as well. It seems that they flee. So Shaul doesn't make it out, but the generals live to fight another day, as they say. Yes, Susan.
I'm not. If
he's
Ishbosheth's name, because I fear, unless I'm mistaken, we shot.
So,
I'm wondering if his name has more in-depth meaning.
So it does. I'm hoping to get to it in Shmuel Beis. Because it is a fascinating discussion. The question of his name, because in certain cases he's called Eshbaal, and in other cases he's called Ishbosheth. So one explanation, just to tell you, offhand, is that Boshes is a name for idolatry. Boshes like something to be ashamed of, a source of shame. So one possibility is that Boshes is a reference to idolatry. And then the question is, well, why are you naming your son for idolatry? Why would you want to call him man of Baal, man of Boshes? So that's something that we have to talk about in Shmuel Beis. But yes, there's a lot to say about this name. Okay. Other questions or comments on that? That was just the wrap up of those who had died and didn't die in the battle. Yes, Ruth.
Yeah. If he fled or if he didn't fight, does that make him would they consider him a suitable to the king?
Evidently, yes. Because he does. He does become king.
What I'm really saying is, why did they consider him suitable to the king?
Right. So there are a couple of things to know about that, which again, you see more of in Shmuel Beis, where he actually becomes king. I didn't want to jump the gun on everything from Shmuel Beis. But one reason why he becomes king is because Avner supports him. And the text in Shmuel Beis will actually say that explicitly. I think it's in chapter 3 there that it says, either chapter 2 or chapter 3. It says explicitly that Avner was the machzik. Avner was the one who held on to and strengthened Avner as king, such that the house of Ishbosheth as king, so that the house of Shaul would continue to reign. So one is that Avner chooses him. But the other really comes back to the question of why it is that he's not fighting. Is it a matter of weakness? Is it something else? We don't know. Right now, we aren't given any information to work with. You know, Barbanel is hypothesizing. But we don't have any hard information yet. We're going to learn more about his personality, God willing, in the beginning of Shmuel Beis. Okay. Other questions or comments on what we've done so far? Okay. To answer the question that I know is the unspoken question, so I'll just answer it by not answering it. I have no idea how far we're getting into Shmuel Beis before the summer, and I don't have any plan yet for if and when and how many shiurim I might continue next year and whether this might be one of them. I just don't know right now. There's a lot that's very much up in the air. Okay.
It's definitely going.
That's the plan. That's the plan.
Sorry, where are you going?
Read the Beit Midrash email, please, from this morning. I'm sorry. I thought that it had been
I'm
read.
It.
Okay, so when you get a chance to read it, it'll answer all the questions or raise more questions or both. So it's that time of year. Pesach is coming. Lots of questions.
Just one quick question. We're in the last parak in Shmuel Aleph.
Yeah.
Presumably we're continuing after Pesach.
Yeah, no, that was what I said. We're going to do some of it before.
We'll get Shmuel Aleph.
Yeah, no, the question is just how much of it we'll cover before the summer. That is correct. Okay, so take a look at Pasuk Gimel. This is where we find Shaul's decision, his fatal decision, and we need to understand what happens here. So, Vatichbad HaMilchama El Shaul. The war becomes heavy against Shaul, meaning the attack is now focused on him. Vayimtzau hamorim anashim bakashas. The archers find him. They figure out where he is and they target Shaul. Vayachel meod mehamorim. Now that, the last few words there in the Hebrew admit of multiple translations. You could read that as he trembled and was afraid. That's one way you could read it. Vayachel, like chil achaz yoshvei plashes, chal chala, that could be what it is. In the Dat Mikra, which I believe is Professor Kiel, if I remember correctly, he adds in the possibility that it's from the word halal, to be injured. Halal is a corpse. So maybe it means that he was very run through. He was pierced, punctured. That's another possibility. Some suggest that it means holy, illness. He became very ill. He became very weak. All sorts of different options. I decided not to ask everybody to read out their translations because that often doesn't work well. But, hang on. So, Vayachel Me'od Mehamorim. Either they have injured him or they have made him ill or he is very frightened of the archers. If he is frightened, which is a strong view among the commentators, the question you have to ask is, what is it that he is afraid of? So, Abarbanel says something which I think is a little bit superfluous. If you take a look at source number 4, he says, Vera'ui sheteida, you should know, Shalo pachad Shaul mehem penyemisu. Shaul is not afraid that they're going to kill him. First of all, because having seen his sons die, we're assuming that he's aware of it, he's not going to want to live at this point. That's first statement from Abarbanel. Further, v'yadami divrei Shmuel ayedei abalas ov shigam hu lo yichya. He knew he wasn't going to live. That information is already his anyway. I would add to Abarbanel's point that if his fear is of death, that doesn't make any sense because he's going to ask them to kill him. One doesn't solve a fear of death by asking to die. Further, he went to war knowing this. He knew it before he ever went. If that was really the case, now you could say, well, it becomes more concrete later on, but I don't buy it, and Abarbanel doesn't buy it. So what is he afraid of? Continuing in Abarbanel, Aval pachad me'od pen yaku oso ba'ofen shelo yamus miyad velo yuchal lilchom. He was afraid that they would strike him in such a way that he would die slowly. He wouldn't die quickly, and he wouldn't be able to fight either. V'yispesuhu chai, they'll catch him alive. V'ya'alilu bo, ya'alilu can be a reference to torture, can be a reference to molestation, has a lot of different potential meanings. Binokram einav, in this case, he gives examples, actually. Putting out his eyes, right? Think of Shimshon. V'chatcham oso eiver eiver, cutting him up. Listen as haplishtim oso lamasha his shchis bahem mehem. Because after all, he had been brutal in his defeats of the plishtim. Ubachar sheyamus ayidei oavav velo ayidei oivav. So he says he'd rather die at the hand of those who will be merciful to him as opposed to dying at the hand of the enemy. It's reminiscent of a Gemara in Ksuvos in source number 5. And this is a classic Gemara that comes up in medical ethics discussions. Remember the story of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah in Sefer Daniel, the second chapter of Sefer Daniel. That's where Nebuchadnezzar makes a great big statue, and he decrees that everybody has to bow down to it, and they refuse to bow down, and they know they're going to be thrown into a fiery furnace, and they say, then that's the way it goes. We're going to the furnace. But they're not willing to bow down to the statue. So look at this Gemara. In source number 5, the Gemara is talking about what's worse, lashes or death. And it says, Dilma Malkos Chamur, maybe it's actually worse to suffer lashes. Da'ama Rav, because Rav, the sage Rav, said, Ilmalei nagduha l'chananya mishal v'azariah polchu litzlama. If they had whipped Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, instead of saying, we're just going to throw them into a furnace, they would have broken. They would have said, all right, we'll bow to the statue. Not because that's the righteous thing to do necessarily, not about a halachic decision, but simply put, people can't put up with unending pain. People can't put up with torture. So that's what you're seeing here, potentially for Shaul. We have to talk about his motivations. But right now, working with that, the answer is Shaul is afraid of being tortured, and that's the fear that's mentioned here. Whereas Malbim takes Vayachel not to mean he is afraid, but rather that he is injured or ill. If you take a look at source number 6, he says, Achar Shemesu Banav, after Shaul's sons died, Kavda Hamilchama Alav Levado, then the war became heavy on him alone, meaning they all focused on him. And further, the archers figured out where he was. And he was already either chole or halal, depending on how you read it. He had been pierced by the arrows. He was made ill by the arrows. But according to Abarbanel, the issue is anticipation. According to Malbim, the issue is actually that he is already there. It's already hitting him. So one or the other, Shaul is suffering, and then you get the Pasuk Dalet. I'm going to take questions and comments once we've read these few psukim. So, Vayomer Shaul Lenosei Chelav. Shaul says to his armor bearer or weapons bearer, whatever this person is, who is with him, Shlof char becha, take your sword out of its sheath, v'dokreni va, and stab me with it. Pen yavohu ha'arelim ha'ele, lest these uncircumcised ones come, Remember that we've seen that throughout Sefer Shmuel, that that's what they call the Plishtim. We've discussed why before. Udekaruni, they're going to stab me. Vihis'alubi, and they're going to torture me. V'lo avanosechelav. However, the aide isn't willing to do it. Ki yarei me'od, because he's really afraid. Vayikach Shaul es hacherev, vayipol aleha. And Shaul takes the sword himself, and he falls on the sword. One more pasuk. Vayar nosei chelav ki meis Shaul. Shaul's aide sees that Shaul is dead. Vayipol gam hu al charbo. He falls on his sword. Vayamas imo. And he dies with him. And that is this terrible end for the life of Shaul that we've been learning about for so long. So there's a lot to say here. I'm going to show you a couple of commentaries, then I'm going to take comments, questions, and so on. But first of all, he says, I don't want the soldiers to stab me and torture me. So Radak brings you the possibility that this is about physical pain, as well as the possibility that it's about degradation. If you take a look at source number 7, he first says, Behargam osi dekiros harbe, when they kill me with many stabbings, derech nekama ubizayon, in a manner of revenge, or in a manner of degradation, and then he quotes Targum Yonasan, the Aramaic commentary to the prophets, to Navi, V'yislaavun bi, is his translation of V'yishalalu, Lashon ta'atua ubizayon, meaning mockery, meaning shame. So either it's physical harm or it's degradation. The armor bearer is afraid. He says, no, I'm not going to do it. Shaul falls on the sword. Here I want to point you to a very odd Gemara. I don't really understand it, but it's there. I mean, I understand what it's doing, but I don't really understand it. Source number 8. Tanu Rabbanan. Our sages taught. Chamisha nivru me'ena dugma shel mala. 5 were created on the model of heaven. And what the commentators on this Gemara say is that it means they were created like Adam was. Adam is the first human being, created in this ideal image designated for human beings by Hashem. They had Adamesque physical traits. Traits that were like Adam. V'chulam lakubahen, and all of them suffered as a consequence of those traits that they received. Shimshon bikocho, Shimshon with his strength. Shaul b'tzavaro, Shaul with his throat. Avshalom b'sa'aro, Avshalom with his hair. Tzidkiah b'einav, Tzidkiah with his eyes. Asa b'raglav, and Asa with his feet. Shimshon bekocho, what was Shimshon with his strength? Because it says, Vayasar kocho me'alav. His strength left him, and that's how the Plishtim are able to get him. And Shaul, with his throat, as it says here, he took the sword, Vayipol aleh, and he fell on it. The assumption seems to be that he fell on it, not the way, if I had polled you, you would have assumed in his chest. Right? No need for acting it out, thanks. That's what I would have assumed it was. And not only that, from the story it's gonna sound like it is. In the story itself it will sound like it. I think what the Gemara is doing is it just likes this parallel of how he had something special as a gift and he got harmed with it. The special gift with the throat is a reference to the idea that Shaul is taller than everybody else. Shaul, it's talking about his height. The fact that he is Mishichmo vamala, from head, from shoulders and up, he is higher than everybody else. That's the height that we are referring to here with his neck. Avshalom with his hair, you know the story. Avshalom in Shmuel Beis will end up being caught in a tree by his hair, and that will lead to his death. He had this beautiful long hair. Tzidkiah with his eyes, we know that Nebuchadnezzar puts out his eyes. And then, and Asa with his legs, Asa is a Jewish king, well, Tzidkiah is also, but Asa falls ill in his feet. He has a foot problem. So, you know, it's not that this actually happens in terms of his throat. I mean, the way that it's gonna sound, as you'll see in Shmuel Beis, is really not that it's his throat. It really sounds like it's his chest. nonetheless, this is what you have here in the Gemara, and the armor bearer sees it and does the same thing himself, and he dies. And Shaul's death will be reiterated in Pasuk Vav, in sentence 6, when it's going to say, Vayamas Shaul ushloshes banav v'nosei chelav, gam kol anashav bayamahu yachdav. Shaul dies, his three sons die, his armor bearer dies, all of Shaul's men die together on that day. Of course, not Abner, right? Abner does not die that day. So kol anashav, all of his men, is a dubious statement. Nonetheless, that's what it says here. Okay. Questions and comments before we go further. Susan.
When we say chas l'chalila.
Yeah.
What does that chalila mean? Then?
So chalila there means a desecration. It will be a desecration of God's name, like chilul Hashem.
Oh, because you said chalila means corpse.
So. And it can. And presumably there's a Hirschian idea linking all of the uses of this term, but chalila there is like from chol, to be mundane. Yeah. Janine and then Chana.
Okay, I just wanted to ask, it's very understandable that someone would be afraid of being either tortured or degraded, but is there also an aspect of kingship? I mean, the Melech has very specific privileges and advantages, and is it not only that he would be degraded and mocked, but the king of Israel would be...
We're going to come back to that. It's a good question. We're just not there yet. I want to spend, after we've gone through the psukim and we've seen the story and there are a couple of more angles on the story that we have to see, I then want to spend a good deal of time, basically everything starting in story 16 on the sheet and down, talking about the ethics of what Shaul did and what his fears were and much more than what we've seen so far. Chana and then Ricky.
So, because it says it, I think that's what I don't remember what Farshad was, who said that Abner fled and maybe Ishbosheth fled with him because all the people who were there. So obviously some of them went away.
So you're saying Anashav means specifically Anashim who were physically there. That's a.
I'm hard to understand why he says that those people fled.
Right. I mean, he has to say they fled, because otherwise, where are they?
Yeah. Okay.
You know? Why is Abner still alive? It's just that Kol Anashav, to me, would have been his men, his loyal men, which should be his general, who he was so close to. Abner was by his side all the time, you know? So it's very surprising to me that Abner is still alive. Ricky?
Since Shaul takes his own life, is there a message to say that it's all right to take your own life when you are...
So that's where we're going in this conversation. This is where we want to go. Once we understand the story, we have to discuss the ethics. But first we need the story.
I'm sorry, I didn't see the answer to my question.
Because I told you, we're going to get to... I said, we're getting to it. I said, we haven't discussed it yet. We're going to discuss the ethics of it after. There is no answer yet. God willing, there will be. This week or next week. But I'll tell you right now, the answer is no. Just the only question is how we get there. So, in terms of the story itself, this passage appears in two other places in Tanakh. I gave you a reference on your sheet, I believe. Yeah, in source number 9. So first of all, we jump to Divrei Hayamim Aleph, chapter 10. The beginning of chapter 10 in Divrei Hayamim Aleph. So, Divrei Hayamim doesn't spend a whole lot of time on Shaul. There's very little other than the genealogy that's there. But we do get the account of Shaul's death. Chapter 10, sentence 1. Uflishtim nilchamu b'Yisrael. The Plishtim were fighting Israel. Vayanas ish Yisrael mipnei Plishtim. The Jews fled. Vayiblu chalalim b'har Gilboa, and they fell as corpses on Har Gilboa. And that's basically word for word of what we saw in Pasuk Aleph here, right? Vayanusu versus Vayanas, but it's basically the same thing. Vayad biku plishtim achare Shaul v'achare banav, And the Plishtim went after Shaul and his sons, and again, it's basically the same, Acharei versus S. Vayaku Plishtim es Yonasan ves Avinadav ves Malkishua b'nei Shaul. The same three sons are listed as dying. Yonasan lost his hay. Here is Yonasan instead of Yehonasan. Vatichbada milchama al Shaul. The war became heavy upon Shaul. Right? The focus is now on him. Vayimtza'u hamorim bakashas. And the archers found him. Vayachel min hayorim. And again, basically the same, we had Vayachal Ma'od Me'amorim. Vayachal again means either he is punctured, or he is ill, or he is afraid. Vayomer Shaul El Nosei Kelav, and Shaul said to his armor bearer, Shlochar Becha, V'dokreini Ba, take out your sword, stab me with it. Penyavoha Arelim Ha'elevis Alubi, lest these uncircumcised ones come and abuse me. V'lo'av Nosei Kelav, but again, the guy won't do it. Then Shaul takes his sword and he falls on it, and the Nosei Kelav sees this. He sees Shaul is dead, and he falls on it as well, and he dies. And Vayama Shaul Ushlosh Banav, the three of them are dead. And here, one note that is interesting: Chol Beiso instead of Anashav, which I think may answer the question of why is Avner still alive if Chol Anashav died. Maybe we're trying to make the point, it's not Anashav, it's actually Beiso, his household, but not all of his men. So that's the account of Divrei Hayamim. It is fundamentally the same. We could spend time on the nuances, but it's fundamentally the same. Yes, Ricky.
This is off topic, but my Tanakh doesn't put Yud for chapter 10 of anywhere. Is this a common practice? Is Yud such a powerful letter?
No, I don't know why they don't do that. What do they do instead?
Looks like.
I can't really see that, but I don't know why they would be doing that. I can't answer that.
So it's not a common practice.
Not that I'm familiar with. So where things become problematic is the beginning of Shmuel Beis. Remember again, because it's so easy to forget this, Shmuel Beis is not a different book. It's the all one book called Shmuel. We just, you know, split it. Yes, Effie. Etty, you gotta either unmute?
Yeah. I was unmute. If it says the whole Beito, then how is Boshet still alive?
Right. So that's a good question, you know, which, you know, their answer will be that it goes on to tell you the story about his son. So, you know, they're relying on that. But you're right, it's a good question. By saying Beito, I would have assumed that meant that his son is dead. It is interesting. And it goes on over there to keep on talking about Mesu Banav. Yeah.
I have another thing about Avner Ben-Ner. He was the general. So maybe he was in one part of the battle and Shaul was in the other part of the battle, and that's how he survived.
Look, you can suggest whatever you like. I'm just pointing it out. It's very, very strange to me. If the king dies, I would have expected the general to go also. But the take a look at Shmuel Beis, chapter 1. So Shmuel Aleph ends with the burial of Shaul by the people of Yavesh Gilad. The next perek, Shmuel Beis, perek Aleph, starts out with word getting to David about the death of Shaul. There's a fugitive from the battle. He is going to identify himself in this passage as being a Ger Amaleki, an Amalekite who has converted in some sense. What type of conversion? We have to see that in the next chapter. But he is an Amalekite who is now with the Jews, who was in the Jewish camp and fled. We're not going to discuss him. That has to come when we learn the chapter. I don't want to get distracted from our focus. But look at that chapter 1, sentence 6. Chapter 1, sentence 6. It's what I referenced for you on the sheet. You can see the reference in source number 9. Vayomer hanar hamagid lo. This youth who was talking to David said to him, Nikro nikresi bahar hal gilboa. I happened to arrive at Har HaGilboa. I was in the area. I wasn't with the army. V'hine Shaul nish'an al chaniso. And there is Shaul leaning on his chanit. You noticed it was a cherev in Shmuel Aleph. Now it's a chanit. The chanit is the spear of Shaul that's been with him all along in all these stories. Is it denoting something different from the cherev? Ralbag doesn't think so. Ralbag uses cherev and chanit interchangeably here. But it's curious. He's leaning on his chanit. The other way you could read it is that the cherev was the weapon Shaul used to try to kill himself. And now Shaul is leaning on the chanit in weakness. That's the other way you could read it. V'hine harechev uvalei parashim hidbikuhu. He says, the chariots, the charioteers, they all caught up to Shaul. Vayifen acharav, and he turned around. No, Ricky, right, you're doing the story first. He turned around. Vayir'eni, and he saw me. Vayikra elai, and he called me. Va'omar hineni, and I said, here I am. Right, the king calls you, here I am. Vayomar li mi'ata, and he said to me, who are you? Va'omar elav, and I told him, Amaleki anochi, I am an Amalekite. And again, later on, in sentence 13, he says, ger Amaleki, but here he says, Amaleki. Vayomar elai, and he said to me, Shaul said to me, Abmadno alai umosiseini. He says, I want you to take my life. Ki achazani hashavetz. Because the shevetz has gripped me. Shevetz may mean tremors, illness. Shevetz might be a reference to a garment that Shaul is wearing. When you think of mishbetzet and ketonet tashbetz. So some commentators suggest that it's a garment of Shaul. Others suggest it's a garment of the Philistine soldiers. And he's saying, the Philistines have caught me. There are a lot of explanations, which again, when we learn this chapter, we have to see in depth. But right now, Shaul is saying, he wants this guy to kill him. Ki cholot nafshi bi, because my life is still within me. So Shaul says to him, to kill him. Va'amod alav va'amosiseyu. And the Amaleki says, I stood over him and I killed him. Ki adati ki lo yichya acharei niflo. Because I knew he wasn't going to live anymore. He had already fallen. He wasn't going to survive. Va'ekach ha'nezer asher al rosho. And I took the crown from his head. Ve'etzada asher al zro'o. And the bracelet on his arm. Va'aviyem el adoni heina. And I brought them to my master here. Here, David, here is the crown. Here is the signs of monarchy, perhaps. So now I have a problem, right? Because our version and the Divrei HaYamim version say Shaul took his own life. The version that the Amaleki is reporting in Shmuel Beis says the Amaleki did it. So is this a case of Shaul getting somebody else to take his life? Is this the case of Shaul doing it himself? Parenthetically, as you read further in that chapter, you find out that David kills him, this Amaleki. That will figure into how we view the story ultimately as well, although not in our discussion today. I'm not taking questions yet. But fundamentally, my problem here is I don't know now how Shaul died. I thought it was simple. I thought it was straightforward. And then I opened the next chapter, and I found out it was anything but. And the commentators are going to be all over the place. So what I want to do here, it's already 2:04. I want to go through the views of the commentators. I want everybody to hear the commentators first. And then after that, we'll do questions and conversation about it. But I think it's useful to hear the different approaches that they bring. We got three approaches. The first approach is Radak. And Radak more or less shrugs. You could do it this way. You could do it that way. I don't know. Take a look. Radak is in source number 10. Kimes Shaul, that Shaul had died. Karo, meaning the armor bearer, saw that Shaul had died. First he says, Karov Lemisa. Not that he was dead, but he was dying. Kimo Betseis Nafsha Kimesa. Like when Rachel gives birth to Binyamin, and it says, when her soul was leaving because she was dying, then she named him Binyamin. I actually translated here as she had died, but it really wasn't. It's really that she, it's really that she was dying. Sorry?
No. I said Ben-Goni, not Binyamin.
Right, well that's the name that we know him by, is Binyamin, but yes. Kilomes Adayin, Ache Miso Ha'amaleki. Because he wasn't dead until the Amaleki killed him. So the first approach in Radak is that the Amaleki is telling the truth. And our Perek doesn't mean he died, it means he was dying. Ve'esher, or it's possible, ki kizeva Amaleki, that no, the Amalekite lied. That's your alternative. Ve'lim tzochein b'nei David, l'fi machshavto amar kein, that he was trying to curry favor with David. He thought David would be happy, right? We've already seen that twice David's men thought that David should just get rid of Shaul, and they tried to convince him either to let them do it or that David should do it himself. And now this Amaleki thinks that that's what David is going to want. So Radak says, yeah, you could read it this way, you could read it that way. Don't know. On the other hand, Abarbanel says no. He says the Amaleki was lying. He didn't do it. First he goes both ways. And the commentary on our Perek, he goes both ways before concluding that the Amaleki finished it off. He says, Ve'ef Shalomar, source number 11. Ve'ef Shalomar Shalomes Miyad im HaKa'as HaKerev. It could be, he didn't die right away when struck by the sword. By the way, now you understand why I find it so strange to say that the cut would have been in his neck. Number one, the idea that he didn't succeed. And number two, the idea that he's leaning on it. Just, it doesn't add up. So he says, unless you say that he's leaning on the chanit and not on the cherev, like you could try to make it work. The question is just why. But he says it could be he didn't die right away with this blow of the sword. Vaz hutzrach lekor lanar hamaleki shemosiseyu, and then he had to call the Amaleki to kill him. Bovin shaloyim tzu a plishtim adayin goseis v'yisalalubo, lest the plishtim find him goseis in a state of dying and then torture him. And our text, in our chapter, was just talking about what Shaul did. The Amaleki is not relevant yet. But the Amaleki was the one who killed him, as he said. And he takes that as the more correct view. Before the part that I brought here, Abarbanel brought the possibility that the Amaleki was lying. But he says, I think it's more correct to say that no, the Amaleki is telling the truth. And that is, in fact, how Shaul died. However, take a look at source number 12. This is, you know, just part of the party here. In Shmuel Bet chapter 4, and why his comment is in chapter 4 requires that we learn Shmuel Bet. Then you'll understand why that's there. But he says, "Umidivrei David bazeh yera'esh shalo harag ha'amaleki es Shaul." He says, from David's words in chapter 4, it sounds like the Amaleki did not kill Shaul. So, I don't know what to do with Abarbanel now. Did he change his mind between one part and another? I don't know. And then you have the view that says, the Amaleki did it. Straightforward, the Amaleki did it, and that's it. Malbim takes that view. In source number 13, he says, Yisbo'er lekaman shalomes al yedei nefila, rak shenaseh goseis. Shaul did not die by falling, meaning falling on the sword. He became a goseis, this person who is dying. Valze amar ki meis Shaul. That's why it said Shaul died. It means shehu shehu ka makas maves. It means he was struck with a fatal blow. Uvchol ze adayin hayanav shobo. But his life was in him still. Vehanar haamaleki gamar misaso. And the Amaleki finished him off. That's Malbim. Ralbag brings multiple options. But he votes for the view that the Amaleki finished him off. And here is his analysis of the story in Shmuel Beis. Source 14, source 15. Yidmeh she'achar she'nafal al-chaniso. He says that Shaul fell on the chanit. That's what I mean when I say Rabag uses it interchangeably, cherev and chanit. He says Shaul fell on the chanit. V'ra'ah she'lo dakrahu, and he saw it didn't run him through. Hayashul nish'an alav b'koach la'hashlim ad-dikira. He's leaning on it, trying to finish the job. He saw he couldn't do it. So he turns to the Amaleki to do it. And the business of the Shevets, in source 15, he says, what I think is, Shehalavush shehaya lavush haya meshubatz. Lahosif lo chozek ba'ofen shlo yuchal hacherev lechotcho bekalut. He says, if you look at the word mishbetzet, when it shows up in the Chumash, like in Parshas Tetzaveh, it's a setting for a gem on the garments of the Kohen Gadol. So you have the regular fabric, and then you have this additional material that supports the gem. And the idea is that it's reinforcements, that it shouldn't be easy to cut through the king's garment. It's like armor. But the problem is that then he can't kill himself. And he's saying, my spear has been gripped by the shevets. Not I am gripped by shevets, but the spear is gripped by shevets. And therefore it was not able to pierce and stab him. So Ralbag and Malbim are of the belief that the Amaleki did it. So I've got Radak going either way. I have a Barbanel first saying here, the Amaleki finished him off, and then in Shmuel Beis saying, no, the Amaleki was lying. And I have Malbim and Ralbag saying, no, the Amaleki did it. What a mess. We haven't yet explained the motivations and the ethics of Shaul. We saw a little bit about his fear. We're going to come back to that. That's where we're going next. But questions and comments just on these stories about how Shaul died. I'm also not going to be analyzing now the Amaleki. That has to wait. Otherwise, what's going to happen is we're going to get to Shmuel Beis, Perek Aleph, and you're going to be like, oh, I know this already. So I'd like us to be able to leave something for Perek Aleph. Yes, Ricky.
I'm not going to talk about the Amaleki, but if he is the one who killed him, it's quite an irony.
Yes.
The other thing is that I'm a little bit confused. At the end of the 31st chapter, it talks about the Plishtim finding Shaul.
We didn't get there yet. We didn't get there yet.
How does that fit in with the rest of the...
We have to get there. Narrative. We're not up to the end of the chapter. We're not going to get to the end of the chapter until Pesach. That's we have a while. I should say, as a general statement, I expect us to have the shiur obviously next Thursday, but I'm not so sure that the 30th makes sense in terms of people's Pesach preparations. When you hit a week before Pesach, that can be difficult. So
okay, I'm going to explain the end of Lamed Aleph.
We're gonna get there, just maybe after Pesach. That's all. You may have to wait, Susan. Yes, that's entirely possible. It's entirely possible that this is a way to end up adopting that. However, they're not making it up. Meaning you have a story here with this Amaleki, and they're saying, if I have to choose which account to trust, it's better to think that that was what happened. Maybe you could make that argument, but I will tell you right now, That doesn't really get Shaul off the hook, because everybody agrees that he tried.
Right.
You know, whether he succeeded or not, he tried, and that's what creates such a big challenge. Ruth.
Do we accept suicide?
We have to read this, right?
Way out?
We have to read this. That's what we're going to learn. That's, look at the heading over source number 16. Was Shaul allowed to pursue his own death? That is where we're going. Ruth.
That they shouldn't kill him, he should kill himself.
Right, so we're going to talk about that. It is definitely part of our conversation.
It's ironic that he's killing, if he killed himself by the sword, was this the same sword that he was trying to kill David with in the past?
So the question is it the Chanit or is it the Cheref?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. The Chanit was the weapon he was trying to use on David. In our parak, it just says Cheref. However, Chanit is introduced in the beginning of Shmuel Beis. That's part of the problem. Okay, so let's talk about this. What Shaul did, what the motivations were, was this, so to speak, legal? So the simple answer for all problems in this story, which none of the Mefarshim, or almost none of the Mefarshim, quote or mention, is that Shaul is not acting of his own free will, and he hasn't been acting of his own free will for a long time. Right? He's been influenced by this Ruach Ra'ah. He went to the Ov, for goodness sake. He massacred the city of Nov, Like, now you woke up and asked, were his actions ethical? Where have you been? So that, to me, is a straightforward answer. The only one I saw who actually mentioned something similar is the Tzitz Eliezer, Rebbe Eliezer Waldenberg. Because in Shmuel Bey's Perek Aleph, when David hears about this, David is going to eulogize Shaul. And that leads to a statement by the sages that eulogy is still appropriate for the circumstance. And the question is, but why? A Jew is not supposed to take their own life. So Rabbi Waldenberg, in his responsum, says, you see it in number 16, Kayadua mavur bechazal ubedivrei aposkim, ki b'misibos sheshaul hayanim sabo, in Shaul's circumstance, lo nechshav k'ma'abed atzmo ledas. It wasn't considered a case of intentional suicide. He doesn't mention the ruach ra'ah, as I recall. He talks about the duress that Shaul is in, the fear that he's going to be tortured and killed, his knowledge that he's going to die. That's why we don't look at this as a model. However, having said that, take a look at the Medrash in source number 17. This is a key source. The Torah says, "V'ach es dimchem lenafshoseichem ed rosh." I brought you the section from the pasuk in the beginning of the source here. Ach, but es dimchem lenafshoseichem ed rosh. I didn't translate it in the English. I should have. Your blood of your lives I will seek. So, your blood of your lives, says the Medrash, lahavi es hachonek atzmo. That is meant to say that somebody who ends his own life is liable for doing so. Yachol kishaul? I might think that would be true even for somebody in a circumstance like Shaul. No, because the pasuk begins, ach. Ach means but, and it is understood as a limiting word. Not everybody is liable. Shaul would not be liable. Yachol k'chananya mishal v'azariah. What about Chananya, Mishal, and Azariah, who we mentioned earlier on, right? Who threw themselves into a fiery furnace, or they got themselves thrown into a fiery furnace. Is that in fact prohibited? No, again, the word ach tells me not. They are an exception to the rule. Now, they are an exception because they're doing it to avoid a situation which will desecrate God's name. The whole story with Nebuchadnezzar's statue. But what is the exception for Shaul? Why is Shaul not going to be liable for this? So, one approach, which I haven't seen anybody bring, is to say, it's because Shaul knew he was going to die. None of the commentators mention that. It becomes relevant in some of the arguments, but no one just says, well, he knew he was dying anyway, so what's the difference? That I have not seen brought as a standalone reason. Some take it as an act of strength. It was not an act of, I'm afraid, I need to get myself out of it. It was an act of strength for a few different reasons. So one approach within that is to say it was a religious act. Take a look at the Ritva in source number 18. Gemara in Avodah Zarah. The Gemara there is talking about the story of Rabbi Chanina ben Tragyon, who we know is killed for teaching Torah in public, but he knew that was going to happen and he did it anyway, and they wrap him up in the Torah, they burn the whole story. Shechaval be'atzmo, so he says Shaul wounded himself. Mipnei shehaya misyarei shema ya'aviruhu al dos, because he was afraid that they would force him to violate religion. He's worried that he's going to be tortured into idolatry. Now, you have to keep in mind who the Ritva is. I gave you his coordinates, so to speak, on the sheet. He's a student of the Ramban's school. End of the 13th century, beginning of the 14th century in Christian Spain. Right? You're talking Inquisition times. So this is very relevant when he makes the statement that he makes. He says, maybe Shaul does this because he doesn't want to be forced to violate the religion, which would fit with him being lumped together with Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Right? They go together. The only question is then why did you bring the word Ach twice? You should have just listed them together because they both are doing it for the same motivation. But that is one argument. Another argument is brought by Shlomo Luria, the Amshal Shlomo, who we're going to see in number 19. If you look at the bottom line in number 19, not the beginning part, but the bottom line of number 19, V'gam efshar mishum kivod melech mashuach Hashem. Perhaps it was for the honor of the king who is the anointed one of God. And this goes back to your question, Janine. She'ein ra'ui she'yamus bidei ha'arelim v'yasu bo misnas inoyu bizayon. It would not be right for him to die at the hands of the uncircumcised ones who would torture him, who would mock him. V'uchilol Hashem bidas emunaseinu. That would be a desecration of God's name in our religion. I don't know why he adds bidas emunaseinu at the end. I find that very interesting, and I don't know what he's, you know, putting those words in for. But according to this school of thought, whether it's that he might be forced to violate Judaism or simply the torture of the anointed one of God, either way, what Shaul is doing is not running away from anything. What Shaul is doing is he is saying, in the name of the religion, I need to make sure this doesn't happen. Rosh Shlomo Luria's main point, his main approach, which is the upper part of source number 19, is different. He says still that it's an act of strength, but it's specifically lest Jews be killed in order to save him. Shaul is saving lives by doing this. Look at the upper part of source number 19. Ve'ulai Shaul alav ha-shalom kivein al ze shenafal al harbo shesavarim yipol chai biyadam yis'alu bo vi'anu oso. Umistama b'nei Yisrael lo yicholun l'ros v'lishma b'tzaras ha-melech v'lo yamdu al nafsham b'linkom nikmaso u'lahatzilo. He says Shaul does this thinking to himself, if he falls into their hands alive, they're going to torture him, they're going to degrade him, and the Jews are not going to be able to just stand by while this is happening, while their king is suffering like this, and they're going to try to save him. V'yipol kama, v'yiplu kama rivavos miYisrael, and tens of thousands of Jews would die. V'hu kvar yadash nigzra alav hagzera. Here he brings in what we mentioned before. Shaul knows he's going to die. Shalo yimaleit me, and he knows he's not escaping. So why would you want a situation in which others are going to die as well? Shaul is saving lives by doing this. In mentioning this, I felt like I should also mention something that was in the news a few years ago. It's been in the news from time to time. And that is the Hannibal directive in the Israeli military. This is an article that talks about a report that criticized it in number 20. Israel's government watchdog agency on Wednesday criticized the military's so-called Hannibal directive that allowed troops to use heavy force when one of their own was abducted, even at the risk of killing the soldier. What are we talking about? So read the rest of the paragraph and you'll see. The directive, used most recently during the 2014 war in Gaza, was canceled by the military in 2016 following heavy criticism. Last year, the military introduced a revised version. During the 2014 war with Hamas militants, Israeli troops used the Hannibal procedure after soldiers feared militants had captured an officer. Israel unleashed heavy shelling and airstrikes on the southern town of Rafah, killing about 100 Palestinians. In other words, the idea was that if soldiers are taken captive, annihilate the area, and if the captives die, so be it. That's the idea. Tamos nafshi im plishtim. Saying that the captives are lost, essentially. We need to do what we need to do militarily, and that's the way it goes. You can look up the Hannibal directive and see much more about it, what's behind it. I've never found out why it's called Hannibal. Whether that is connected to the military figure or whether it's just a code name, I've never been able to discern. I don't know why it would have to do with, you know, Hannibal. The only thing I really know about Hannibal are the elephants. But the point is the idea for Shaul is, I don't want a situation in which they are holding me, and the result is that Jews are killed in order to save me. I see the hands, but I'm not ready for hands yet. We're going to end up having this discussion on this next time, but I wanted to just show you one more point within this. Taking this as an act of strength, whether an act of strength for religious reasons or an act of strength in order to save lives, either way, reminds me of something we learned long, long ago, right? It's been a few years when we learned the story of Shimshon. Shimshon ends his life, you will recall, with an attack on the Plishtim that brings down the building. So I believed that that was not actually an act of ending his own life. I still believe that Shimshon thought he was going to survive. He expresses his willingness to die with the Plishtim, but Shimshon believes that just like every other time in his story, Hashem is going to bail him out. However, that's certainly not the mainstream read of the story. And Professor Yael Shemesh said something very interesting on this in source number 21. I'm going to read out my English translation. She says, Shimshon's suicide is the only scriptural case in which the stated goal for suicide is revenge. And I will avenge one of my two eyes from the Philistines. Based on this, suicide is not the goal, but rather a means and side effect of the suicidal person's desire to kill others. Shimshon, unlike the other biblical suicides, takes this drastic step not out of concern for the future, but because of his rage toward those who had tortured him. She says, this is an aggressive act. It's a military act. I am going to bring down the building and take as many of them down as I can, and I'll go along with them. So what we've seen are the views that suggest, again, that this is an act of strength. Flip that. There's a whole other school of thought that says, no, this is a flight from personal suffering. He is suffering, and he just wants that to end. He doesn't want to experience any more pain. So Ramban talks about that in source number 22, in which he describes him doing so. He's not called somebody who kills himself intentionally, because he's really just doing it because of ones, because he is compelled. He doesn't explain what ones means. However, if you look at source number 23 from Rabbeinu Usher, the Rush, he says the issue is pain. That's really what we're talking about. Shaul is being pursued. He's going to be harmed, and that's why he does this. I have more that we don't have the time to be able to do. So I'm not going to try to race and cram everything in, but I did want to make sure to mention one thing very, very clearly, because I haven't discussed it, and I really should have included in the beginning of the conversation, which is to say that as a general rule, the position of halacha is that if somebody, for whatever reason, dies by suicide, we tend to assume that it was an act born out of suffering and potentially mental illness rather than an avera. We don't treat it as a transgression. I'm only familiar with one case in which a person was buried outside the cemetery. I only know of one such case, and in the case that I'm familiar with, they ended up expanding the cemetery, as happens over time, and now the person is in. The reality is, not just as a modern reality, this goes back centuries, the understanding that this is not to be treated as a decision somebody made willfully and, an act against God. This is an act of somebody who was suffering. Yeah, hence the term dying from suicide as opposed to committing, which is not a language that I'm okay with. There's more to be said on all of this. I just noticed it's 2:30. So yeah, no, we're going to have to stop here. We'll come back to it, God willing, next week. Hopefully there'll be something positive to say also before Pesach. Either that or I'll throw in a Pesach Dvar Torah, because I don't want to go into Pesach with Shaul's death. That's just terrible. So God willing, next Thursday. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.